What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a Critical Care Pharmacy podcast. This is episode 187. In this episode, I'll discuss an abstract by a pharmacy resident about the use of a combination antibiotic bag in severe sepsis and septic shock. I have all the evidence supporting today's show in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode187. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. At the NYSHIP Annual Assembly, I saw a presentation about a novel way to increase compliance with the sepsis core measure bundle of antibiotics and 30 mLs per kilo of crystalloid fluids for septic shock. The author of this investigation is Michael Lorenzo, and he agreed to join me on the podcast to discuss his intervention. Pharmacy Mike is a doctor of pharmacy and PGY1 resident at Upstate University Hospital in Syracuse, New York. Mike, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I really appreciate it.
So what was the title and the purpose of your study?
So the title of my investigation was The Impact of a Combination Antibiotic Bag on Compliance with Surviving Sepsis Campaign Goals in Emergency Department Patients with Severe Sepsis and Septic Shock. And the purpose of this, and a little background, was initially our emergency medicine department and our nursing departments realized that we had relatively poor compliance rates with our surviving sepsis campaign goals in our ED patients. So they reached out to the pharmacy department, and we all kind of collaborated along with the infectious disease department on a means of trying to increase our compliance. And a couple of our emergency medicine pharmacists came together with the idea of streamlining the process by mixing 2 grams of cefepime and 1 gram of vancomycin and 1 liter of normal saline, trying to consolidate antibiotic and fluid administration. And we started preparing these and storing them in our emergency department refrigerator and had this as an option to our providers. It's not something they're forced to use. It's something that's available to them. And we hope that this would have an impact on our compliance rates.
Awesome. So besides yourself, it sounds like a lot of other people were involved in the study. Anyone in particular you want to name?
Particularly Rob Seabury was a big help. It was kind of his idea to mix all these things together, and he was the one who initially discovered the stability data and played around with some different ideas. So he was one of the biggest helps in this, and along with everybody who's listed as my co-investigators on this. But it was really an interdepartmental effort, and a lot of people really put a lot of work into this.
Awesome. I'll have all the co-investigators listed in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode187. So what was the methodology that you used for your study?
So we rolled out this intervention on June 1st of 2016. And after we had a considerable amount of patients who received this intervention, we went back and looked at some of the data that we collected. And it wasn't necessarily an interventional analysis. It was more observational. And we looked at patients who received this intervention versus patients who had received more traditional care with typically a combination of vancomycin and zosyn. And we compared a variety of outcomes, as mentioned, surviving sepsis campaign compliance, as well as time to fluid administration and time to antibiotic administration.
Great. So I understand you had the antibiotic bag was available. Physicians could choose to use it or not. About how long was it available, and what type of education did you do before you did your retrospective look back?
So it was available for about 3 months before we started the collecting the data initially, and it's still available down there now. As far as education, the providers and the nurses down in the emergency department were made aware that this is something that is available, but we really didn't put a lot of education into, this is something that they should be using. We kind of wanted them to use it at their discretion. We did advise that, and we have in our order set, that this is not something that covers anaerobes. It's not something that covers atypicals. So we provided a little stewardship education in that regard. But overall, we've really just made it an option for them and provided the education that this is, a safe option that has prior stability data and is not something that we just kind of made up.
Great. Please share with us, what were the results?
So for our results, we actually found that the combination antibiotic bag, or the CAB, was associated with an increased probability of receiving antibiotics within 3 hours and fluids within 3 hours. We actually found those to rates that patients who received the CAB received those, about 64% of patients received those interventions, and patients without the CAB only received those interventions at a rate of about 23%. We also found that patients in the CAB group received a greater crystalloid volume in the ED, and they received their antibiotics at a faster time, at about 72 minutes versus 135 minutes. So we found that on multiple levels, this intervention had a significant impact.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, in your abstract, you also mentioned you were going to look at mortality as a secondary measure. How did that turn out?
So we found a 7.5% absolute difference in mortality, but we did not find this to be a statistically significant finding. This could be contributed, or the fact that there were only 160 patients included overall is likely a large contributor to this, and that to detect a statistically significant difference, we would need a much larger cohort. But 7.5% difference we feel is still clinically relevant and something that we're going to investigate further.
So the trend was in favor of which group?
The CAB group.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned you store the combination antibiotic bag in the fridge in the ED, and there is stability data. How long is it stable for?
Under refrigerated conditions, it's stable for 10 days.
Nice. Now, why don't you maybe talk a moment about what you feel some of the barriers you had to meeting the sepsis quality measures were for antibiotics and fluids within 3 hours, and how specifically does the CAB address those barriers?
That's a great question. So we think that there's a lot of difficulties in achieving these measures. I mean, the Surviving Sepsis campaign has made these recommendations for a long time, but it's quite a lofty goal when you think about it. And when you look at some of the nursing surveillance data and some of the reports out there, there can be issues in communication and staffing that can contribute to these delays. But logistically, it's a very difficult thing to perform as well. Commonly, a nurse who were to administer broad-spectrum antibiotics and fluids would have to go to the Pyxis room and grab 1 or more liters of fluid. They'd have to grab an antibiotic that's maybe pre-mixed. Maybe they'd have to mix it themselves. And then they have to have their 2 antibiotics, as we saw here, commonly a combination of vancomycin and zosyn, and assess whether or not those are compatible via Y-site administration or via admixture. And then they actually have to determine how they want to administer these. They want to administer them ideally simultaneously, but that can be an issue if they're not compatible, as there's some conflicting data showing the compatibility of vancomycin and zosyn. But then they actually have to go about administering them. And if they're not in the room continuously, these are all things that can contribute to the delays in these interventions.
Absolutely. Did you consider any other antibiotics besides the combination of vanco and cefepime for the CAB?
So initially, a combination of vancomycin and zosyn was investigated. I think that's what a lot of EDs use as kind of a sepsis bundle. It provides very broad coverage. And we actually found that it was not compatible via Y-site administration. That was our plan to do that. So we kind of found that that was not a viable option for these patients. And the best stability data with what our antibiogram would guide us to use was with vancomycin and cefepime.
Great. Now, the vanco dose was 1 gram in 1 liter. That's less than the typical loading dose for most septic shock patients if you're assuming that practitioners are going to use the 25 to 30 milligram per kilo load. What was it that made you choose 1 gram for the intervention in this case?
So when you look at patients in the emergency department who are in this acuity of illness, one of the most important things is the prompt initiation of antimicrobials. So Fuller and colleagues has a report of about 4,500 patients who received vancomycin in the emergency department, and they found that the lion's share of those patients, over 90%, received a dose of 1 gram. And they actually didn't find that this was associated with increased mortality or decreased positive outcomes. And furthermore, they actually found that doses over 20 milligrams per kilogram were associated with increased mortality. And also that coupled with the pharmacodynamic parameters of vancomycin being AUC to MIC based, a dose of 1 gram versus a weight-based dose is likely not going to impact the overall AUC. And we actually have internal data showing that the 24-hour AUC in patients who receive a weight-based dose versus a dose of 1 gram in the ED has no impact on the 24-hour AUC to MIC ratio.
That's interesting. Yeah, something I didn't really know until I had dug a little deeper on it. Vancomycin association with cure, it really has nothing to do with trough. It's the AUC to MIC ratio being over 400. And
right.
It's just, I guess, trough people felt was easier to measure and calculate, at least those that looked in the guidelines. So do you measure AUC-MIC in your inpatients on Vanco as the measure of whether you're giving enough?
We do, actually. Recently, we adopted an AUC-based method, and we have autonomous pharmacy-based vancomycin dosing. So we're able to draw two levels and do a full kinetic consult and estimate an AUC based off some equations that we use.
Oh, that's awesome. You find your vancomycin doses are maybe on the lower side, but still getting the ratio above 400?
Yeah, we actually have one of the infectious disease resident here is doing a pretty interesting project where he actually found that we commonly will have troughs below 15, but our target attainment in regards to AUC is above 400. So we're actually able to spare up the vancomycin dose and not go for troughs that have been associated with nephrotoxicity, but still provide an increased probability of target attainment.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, did you discuss this intervention being used in places in the hospital other than the ED, specifically in patients that are diagnosed with sepsis?
So that's not something that's been discussed so far. The primary goal of this was in the emergency department, but it's possibly something that can be looked at in the future.
Cool. Any limitations you see to your intervention being extrapolated and applied to other centers at this point?
I think there are some limitations. I think that, you know, we're an academic medical center and we have a pretty strong pharmacy presence here, and we were able to kind of drive this process to some degree in collaboration with other departments. But I think that this is a new intervention. It's novel, and it might not want to be adopted at other institutions. And if you don't have as robust a pharmacy-based dosing of vancomycin, there is a possibility that despite the dose of 1 gram not really being associated with any sort of increased risk of treatment failure in the ED, it is possible that you couldn't dose that up on the back end appropriately if you don't have a great pharmacy-based vanco dosing.
Gotcha. So what conclusions did you make with your study, and what are your next steps given those results?
So the conclusions that we came to is that the intervention, the CAB, increased the probability of achieving surviving sepsis campaign goals of care, for at least for crystalloid and fluid crystalloid and antibiotic administration in the ED. And we feel that some further directions we want to look at this in is not necessarily the overall outcome of mortality, but looking at some outcomes as ICU length of stay, clinical stability on admission to floor. And then something that our sepsis team is interested in is the CMS metrics. And is this something that increases our rate of reimbursement? Because that's still what guides the payment scheme, is the compliance with the surviving sepsis campaign metrics.
Gotcha. Yeah, those are some interesting future steps. So stability when they come to the floor, meaning perhaps using the CAB could avoid the need for vasopressors in these patients?
Yeah, that's something that we have looked to investigate. And we did look at the rates of vasopressor use, but we didn't really collect on enough patients to make a conclusion on that.
Great. Well, I definitely wish you luck in future studies on this topic. I think it's an excellent one that deserves lots of future study.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Mike. Take care.
Yeah, thank you.
The last time I had a guest on the podcast was way back in episode 24. So please let me know in the comments at pharmacyjoe.com/episode187 or by emailing joe@pharmacyjoe.com if you would like to see more episodes like this on the podcast. Starting Thursday, May 4th, 2017, members of my Critical Care Pharmacy Academy will have access to my new masterclass, ICU Sedation. To learn more about the Academy and join, go to pharmacyjoe.com/academy. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.